right, welcome to Pretentiousness, episode 4, broadcasting live, well, not live, but we're live right now.
We are.
Out.
Alive.
We are live. We are alive. and Josh is upstairs in downtown Kansas City, which is awesome. My guest today is Josh Snow, guitarist for Le Grand, newly reformed band. Josh, why don't you give us a little synopsis of yourself, a little artist bio.
Oh, shoot.
On the spot.
On the spot. I don't know. I guess I just grew up listening to R&B and singing a whole bunch, so I sing, but like not really professionally.
He's a great singer.
Thank you. And then I learned to play guitar at 13, taught myself, got really into guitar, and then so I've been in like a few bands since I was like 16. Started my current band Le Grand when I was I think like maybe I was probably 19 or 20, and then so we were together for a while doing we were doing like I'm 28 now for future reference.
28.
But we were like doing like, you know, post-hardcore kind of music, whatever, with singing and kind of noodly guitars and all that. And we did pretty well for a while. We were like kind of all living and staying in Lawrence. Did pretty good in that scene out there. And then through a series of unfortunate events, we just kind of like parted ways. Everything sort of fell apart.
Oh, yeah, with bands, it happens, man.
Yeah, especially when girls are involved. But
relationships in general,
right?
Yeah,
well, yeah, not
definitely.
Just yeah, but and so then we sort of split up for 5 years, did our own thing. I started writing again, just guitars, like super guitar centric music.
Thanks.
Yeah, I agree. And then met back up with Sam, our drummer from Le Grand, started showing him the stuff I was writing, and we started writing stuff again. Sterling, our guitarist, had moved to St. Louis about halfway through our little hiatus, and ended up moving back shortly after Sam and I got together, and we just kind of got back together, started finishing off the stuff I'd written, and then like elaborating on that, and so now we are back together as a band, minus the vocals, because we just decided to focus on guitar, and the singing was way too hard. We were over it.
Yeah, which is important, and we can like get into that later too, about the difference between instrumental music and singing and stuff like that too, because I know we've had some pretty interesting conversations about that, especially with film as well, with like silent films and not having dialogue.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of parallels.
But yeah, so am I one of those pieces of shit that has been pronouncing your band name wrong all these years?
No, you can pronounce it however you want.
Okay. Because people are always like, people always say, how did you just say it?
Le Grand.
Le Grand?
Yeah.
Okay, people always say Le Grand. I'm like, it's Le Grand. I'm that guy.
I actually like that better because it sounds more
I've
regal
been
or whatever.
That guy.
But like at the same time, I don't know. I think I'm just too American.
Well, Josh, I'm going to do an early shout out just because if people don't stick around to the end. But seriously, Le Grand, check them out however you can. I know you guys have a Bandcamp right now, right? A SoundCloud maybe?
I think we have a SoundCloud, Bandcamp, Facebook's good. We got a bunch of live videos on Facebook of songs we haven't released yet.
Yeah, and there's still like at least one old video of you guys too. Playing Demi Noor. It's kind of like a live session that you guys did, so it's really good. So you can kind of get a feel for old Le Grand, new Le Grand.
With vocals, without vocals.
Either way, it's incredible.
Yeah.
If you're in the Kansas City area, go check them out. They play a lot of shows. You said you just booked 5 shows, right?
Yeah.
So keep your eye out for Le Grand shows, because I have been to 1.5, and mesmerizing and amazing. So, Josh, happy to have you on the show.
Thanks, Johnny.
So, the first kind of portion of this, I wanted to dive into something that I think is super important to talk about. Because, yeah, we could sit here and talk for an hour about music appreciation, inspirations, and stuff like that, because that is very important, and we can definitely get into that later.
Right.
But I think something that people don't understand, and that is a super relevant and important topic, is how fucked up this industry is.
Yeah.
Like, it I mean, it goes hand in hand with any type of entertainment or art industry, but there's a lot of issues.
Right.
And especially from the indie, and by that I mean independent. I mean, like, full on, like, you fund DIY. Yourself. Yeah, you do it yourself. You produce yourself. You book yourself. You do what you can. I mean, I think indie to a lot of people is like a genre, which, yeah, right. I guess it is in a way.
Right.
But most of the time when people think indie, they're thinking of alternative as a genre.
Right.
But indie to me is like independent. Like, right. You guys are independent.
Which is how it started.
Exactly. You got to rely on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's a bunch of bullet points that I have here. And one of them is that I was reading this article and it was really interesting, but it got into like Spotify and the way people can get their music out there. And one of them was that it kind of brought something that even made me think about my films too, is that artists don't know what they should be getting paid.
Right.
Is that true? Do you identify with that?
Oh yeah, completely. Well, especially like when you first start out, I mean, you can't really expect to be getting paid at all. And so,
oh God, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, and so then, like, whenever you do get to the point where you have a finished product and you're like trying to market it, you obviously want to make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like, at what point do I start, you know, requiring to make money off of it?
Exactly.
What point do I start demanding?
Oh yes,
like guarantees for shows, or when do I start charging for my albums or my music? To, like, as opposed to, giving it away for free or donation based. There's all kinds of different strategies and stuff for how to make more money.
Absolutely.
And it's definitely something that's always up in the air. And like, even whenever you go to sign a contract with a label or something, mm-hmm. like that, like, you know, you don't know what your options are. Basically, you get given however many options you can get, you
yeah.
know, as far as offers and stuff go, and then you just have to choose from that. But then there's also the option of not, you know, not signing with people, which is really popular these days.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people, like Chance the Rapper, for instance, was like probably the most recent, biggest independent artist. And he was like making way more money than he would have ever made signing to a label.
Yeah.
So you have to like decide whether or not you have the fan base for that, how much like a label can help you and all that stuff. But then on top of that, you still have like, you have to actually worry about the sales, the ticket sales, like shows, and I just honestly have no idea how you're supposed to judge what you should be making as far as money goes, like,
because we don't know.
Right.
Especially, I mean, I don't think anybody actually ever knows.
No.
I think even at the professional base, people get paid what they get paid,
right.
And they get used to it after a while, and there's no really like, well, I should be making this amount of money.
Right.
Like with salary based jobs, it's just like, you get your salary up front.
Yeah.
So you know how much you're making a
year. Right. This kind of job makes it's this like, much money.
Yes.
But like musicians make any range
yep.
of money.
Yep. Have you ever, that's an interesting question too, because I've never really talked to you about that, but have you ever been in a situation where you possibly had a signage deal? Like,
no. No, not as far as like a label goes, or like, you know, yeah, like a traditional label goes. We've had offers for like booking agents, management, stuff like that.
Which is the same ballpark.
It is, but at the same time, so labels will front you money, and then mm-hmm. you owe them, whereas,
yeah.
right, so you don't really make money.
That's what happened with, as far as I'm concerned, this could be completely falsified information, but from what I heard, that's kind of what happened with Josephine Collective, is that they got signed to Warner Bros. And just could not pay that money back.
Well, there was that, but also, I don't want to, like, spread rumors, but, like, there was also problems with like how they were behaving themselves,
yeah.
and like whether or not they could, I don't know if it was necessarily monetarily based, but like they didn't have the hype they should have.
Yeah. I mean, when you're signed to something like Warner Bros,
right,
it's difficult,
right?
Which, I mean, I of course, and I know you're not either, like, we are not dogging on Josephine at all.
No,
because they were, I mean, for a while they were like my favorite band ever.
Yeah,
like went to all their shows here, had shirts, I still have physical copies of their first CD they ever released.
Yeah,
I mean, I was a Josephine fanatic.
Yeah, I still listen to their album, their Warner Brothers album.
Oh,
it's
my
so
God.
Good. And John Feldman produced it, of Avril Lavigne fame and Good Charlotte. Dude, he
yeah.
like did a great
I'm
job.
Pretty sure he even did he do drugs.
He might have, yeah, actually.
I think he did.
I think you're right.
But yeah, I mean, he's good. And so, yeah, I mean, it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it does. But yeah, that kind of goes into the next thing, which is not labels, then it's kind of the self-distribution, which nowadays is Spotify, iTunes, and stuff right. like that, which is all kind of like the same conglomerate.
Right.
But,
And then, like, have you heard of blockchain? Like, or I think
I have not.
So, like, there's all kinds of new blockchain type distribution. I guess I don't know if you call it companies, like software, whatever it is. But basically, it's like a programmed contract that when someone uses your music, you automatically get paid for that. There's no middleman. Like, it's like your music is being used now. You're automatically guaranteed the money directly from your music to you. There's like all kinds of crazy software involved in that. It's like the same software that they use for digital currencies.
Okay.
To like guarantee
yeah.
Irontight transactions and stuff like that. So that's yeah. like a new thing. I think the lead singer of Imogen Heap, maybe, I want to say. Well, I guess there's only one singer, but she's the one that like is pioneering the new thing for that. It's interesting stuff. I don't know enough to talk about it, but you should look into it.
Well, do you think that Spotify is legitimately screwing over artists? Do you think, because Spotify right now is blowing up. I mean, people use Spotify, and for myself, like paying for Spotify, which I mean, it's not a lot. It's like $10 a month.
No,
for yeah, me now that I'm not a student,
worth it. If you,
I mean, it's worth it.
Almost
yeah.
everyone agrees it's worth it.
And I think a part of me feels that, like, in some way, like deep down, I'm like supporting artists
yeah.
by paying for Spotify in a way
right.
because of how much music I listen to on there. But like with a lot of stuff I've read lately, it doesn't seem like it's that
good for artists.
Yeah, good for artists.
Yeah, it's kind of a well. It's kind of there's another way to look at it, I think, which is like that. Basically, Spotify and iTunes first, and then so Spotify. And then, you know, Apple Music, everything now has basically just completely turned the industry on its head.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, like, it's not so much that they're screwing artists, they've just completely revolutionized the way that music is brought to consumers. So, like,
yeah.
There's no getting around it. It's not like if they weren't doing it, someone else wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
It's just something that you have to live with now, I think. And so, I think that resulted in a lot of people coming up with new ways to make money off their music, new avenues for monetizing their music, basically,
yeah.
you know? And like, you have to. Like, it's just something that you have to adapt to at this point. Like,
yeah.
there's no going back. Like, Spotify is not going away. You're not going to force them to pay artists more. People aren't going to pay more for Spotify.
But that goes into my next thing, too. Do you think that, I mean, that's a good point. It's like you can't really complain about that.
Right.
But do you think that, in your perspective, do you think that the bar should be set lower for indie artists? Do you think that because Spotify probably pays artists the exact same amount, I don't think it matters whether you're a bigger artist. But let's be honest, bigger artists are going to get more plays. They're going to get more attention to their profiles, more hits on each song.
Right.
So probably making more money than like an indie artist is.
Right.
But that's because they're bigger.
Right.
Do you think the bar should be set lower for artists who aren't going to get a million hits with a song?
You mean like as far as pay goes? Like,
yeah.
You think they should be making more money?
Not more money, but have some sort of curve, because they're obviously not going to be making the same amount of money as these other people are that have a base. Like, if Spotify is accessible to not only professional artists, but for indie artists, too, that are trying to get their name out there, don't you think there should be some sort of scale that determines, like, how big you are on Spotify to... Mm-hmm. what the rates kind of go up and down. Not to say that you make more as an indie artist, but it's just like, here, I'll put this in an example to maybe understand, because I might not be making sense, but it's just right now I'm trying to figure out how to get Dark Room out there, my mm-hmm. film, and I pay $10 a month right now for Vimeo Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows me to upload HD videos, with a certain gigabyteage a month or something like that.
Right.
And so I always thought that I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll just like put it on Vimeo and sell it that way.
Right.
However, I realized that I have to be a Vimeo Pro member to sell my videos on there. Mm-hmm. $20 a month.
Right.
I am, I mean, this might say a lot about me, but I'm not a confident enough artist to think that I'm going to be making that margin. I'm going to be selling the film for rentals or purchase enough to be making that $20 a month.
Right.
So I'm here, I'm sitting here going, wait a second. So I'm paying $10 a month already for Vimeo, but I have to pay $20 a month to sell my movie.
Right.
How am I going to make money? How am I making money as an artist?
Afford that, right?
How am I getting anything out of this?
Well, that's so that's an interesting thing. Like, you could compare directly to the Spotify analogy. There, you have to do this sort of like back and forth, pros and cons type thing. How much is having it on Vimeo helping you as an artist, or Spotify helping you as an artist to get your product out there, versus how much you're making versus how much you're paying for the service? In a lot of ways, I think that Spotify is good for artists because it's direct. Like, most people have it on their phone. Like, it's directly accessible to someone on the go. Like, you just tell your friends, hey, my music's on Spotify, and now they have your music.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't take any effort at all for someone to listen to your music now because it's on Spotify. Same with Vimeo, or, like, even, you know, YouTube, if you were to go that route. But I just think it becomes less viable to make money off of those services than the old way of making money, which is just selling your product.
Yeah.
Like, it's become more of a marketing tool. And I think it, like, kind of, it forces the curve. So, like, the top percentage of artists make, like, the top 1% or 5%, however,
yeah, absolutely,
whatever, they make all the money.
Yeah.
Like, compared to the other 95%, they're making all the money. Like, there's a, I can't remember who said it. Somebody was talking about an analogy about books, because, so, like, the top 1% of booksellers make all the money, because it's Stephen King, basically. Stephen King's, like, the top, author, basically.
Yeah.
And his books are on the top shelf in paperback form at every bookshelf and every airport across the country. And so when people go to buy books, it's right there. He's making all that money. And so he's gotten the fame and, like, the notoriety or whatever.
Movie deals, for Christ's sake.
No
shit. Every book that he makes.
Yeah. And so he's gotten to that point where it's, like, completely self-sustaining. Like, he doesn't have to promote his music anymore. He doesn't have to, or his books anymore. He doesn't have to do anything to make money because they sell themselves, literally.
Yeah.
Like, they're just on the top shelf. And the same goes for music and film. You know, like, once you get to that point where you're known well enough,
mm-hmm.
your music or your film, your art, whatever, will sell itself. So you have to decide and, like, constantly go back and forth, like, how much is Spotify helping me? How much is Vimeo helping me? Am I going to get to that point where my music starts to pay for itself, my art starts to pay for itself, or do I need to do stuff outside of that first to get myself the recognition that it requires to actually start making money? And that,
absolutely,
like, that's what it's come to, I think, in terms, in almost, like, every genre of art, is it's gotten to the point where it's more important than ever to make a name for yourself, and harder because of the internet. And also, like, you know, it's easier at the same time because it's just direct. You just put your stuff on the internet and you shop it to everyone you can. But, like, there's everyone on the internet. Everyone is putting their art on the internet.
And I think a lot of people are also going to argue that you're paying for the name brand too.
Right.
Because, I mean, let's say there's some, like, third party
Spotify.
Yeah, I'll there's shoot. Like, some third party Vimeo or Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
That I could try to market a film on. People aren't going to really want to put in their credit card information on something that doesn't look as professionally and as recognizable as Vimeo.
Right. And you just know, like, I mean, or at least assume as a consumer that there's not as many options on third party
exactly.
or, you know, alternative sources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just in your best option, like, or your best interest. Like, even if it's not a great option, it's basically your only option.
Yeah.
To do that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, last thing on distribution, I guess, is just, I mean, for instance, when way back when I made my first feature film, and I made hard copies of it, and like I like legit, like they were through a company, and I, you know, they were legit. I think I ordered like maybe 100 of them. I think I only sold like 50 of them, maybe 60.
Yeah.
And so I mean, to this day, I think I still have a box of them.
Right.
And I'm just like, you know,
did it pay off?
Like, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Was it worth the hard copies? So yeah, at the same, like, yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, I don't really think we've changed that much as far as money goes. Like, artists back in the day were printing their own albums, making their own CDs and stuff, but, you know, were they really selling that many? Were they making money? It was almost always about getting your name out there.
And you don't want, I mean, I don't want to, like, I'm coming off as a sellout right now, but the point is that, like, it's not about that, because right. like I would rather get into a festival mm-hmm. and compete and maybe even be given like even something like a audience choice award, not even like a winner or something like that, then make money off of a film.
Right.
Like, to me, that is worth more.
Right.
Because it gives you recognition.
The recognition
gets
is
your work out there.
It's where you start. You start with recognition, then you make money. Like, somebody was telling me the other day that, like, you know, money can't be your goal, because
absolutely.
if you make money your goal,
and it's
you'll
not.
Yeah, right.
And at this point, I'm like, God, if I'm in it for the money, I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, the wrong thing.
If you make money your goal, you'll never get there. Like, the substance is what makes you the money, and you have to focus entirely on the substance and then the promotion of your substance to get the money. Like, the money comes from doing the right things. It's not it's not something you can shoot for. There's no straight avenue for money. It's like, if you're doing the right things, if you make good enough stuff, you get money.
And that's the shitty part, is that it's not even about that for me.
Right.
It's so much less. Like, the short film I've made is 11 and a half minutes without credits. And so what I've been wanting to do is, I'm like, well, I want to get it out there. I want people to see it. But the amount of work that went into this, the amount of people that were involved and put their hearts into this project, not just me. I mean, for the first time, you know, like we talked about that one time, like, it doesn't feel like it's just my film. It feels like it's everybody's who was involved, because there's so much original work in there from artists, composers, actors, everything.
Right.
Editors. And so for me, I'm like, you know, I want to get it out there on the internet, but I just want to get a little bit back from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna put it up, and I want to like rent it for like $1.99, so people can watch it for like less than $2. But for me to even do that,
you have to basically shell out money.
And yeah, so it's just like, so at the end of the day, you know, if it doesn't make that profit, it's just like, once again, here I am paying more money to get something out there.
Right.
And it's just like, yes, at the end of the day, could I upload it for free and just have people watch it? Yeah, of course I could. But like you said, there's this principle, and it comes to it. And I know that there's a lot of people in Kansas City who have reached out to work with me, and I'm like, yeah, this is my daily rate, like, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, like, could you do it for any less? And I'm like, no. Just because, like we talked about at the beginning, you come into these things knowing that you're not making money.
Right.
And I've met people who are like, you know, just getting into it, who want to start getting paid. And I'm like, dude, you're going about this all wrong. Like, right. I worked on commercials for free before.
Yeah.
Like doing production assistant work, or even gripping sometimes, you know, not getting paid. And it's because I made those connections by showing my work effort and like dedication.
Right.
And then they say, okay, like, this person, I want this person to keep coming on my crew. And then they start paying you.
Right.
And so, like you said, the money comes when you're doing the right thing. And I think that's very important. I think the right thing is all about work ethic. And
it is, but, like, there's this psychological aspect to art, I think, that maybe a lot of people probably don't understand or haven't dealt with, where you, it's entirely, like, faith-based. Like, you have to have faith in yourself, confidence in yourself. Not even necessarily confidence. Like, you may not even think it's going to work, but you just have to put all your effort behind it. And, like, if you don't have the confidence or the faith to, like, push your music out there, it will not go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, your art. And it's hard to keep that going a lot of times. Like, if you rely on your feedback from the consumers, your friends, whatever, a lot of the time it's not enough to convince you that it's mm-hmm. worth it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it has to, like, be a self-gratifying thing at the very start, you know? And then, like, you have to keep that up, and it's really hard a lot of times. And, like, you know, to come at it from a personal perspective, I think that's what happened with LeGrand when we broke up the first time. We got to the point where we had kind of plateaued, and we were trying to write new music and, like, innovate on what we'd had before. And we were doing good, but there was just, like, the morale. Trying to keep the morale of four people up is really hard. And, like, you have to know, like, it's like a psychological battle, like, yeah. with yourself to keep going when you're not getting any returns off of it necessarily. And, like, you'll hear it a lot of the times from, like, successful artists. They're like, yeah, I just did it and did it and did it, and then one day it worked. Yeah. Like the Beatles, I mean, they were together for 10 years or whatever, right, before it happened.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a certain amount of perseverance that is just required, and you're not guaranteed anything at all. Like, it's not guaranteed to pay off. You know, you may spend 20 years of your life and then nothing.
Yeah.
So it's a super hard battle, like, emotionally and psychologically.
And I think the nothing probably comes from, like, the idea of fame and fortune.
Right.
Possibly. But I think if you are passionate, and I think that's, I was thinking about that as you were talking, is that it's almost like this scale.
Right.
Of that has to balance itself between the faith and the passion.
Right.
You have to have an equal amount of both to even consider the risk of continuing to do it for the rest of your life. Because, like, LaMurda,
right,
my band back in the day, it was, you know, by the time I had quit, it was because I had hit this level of, I am not as passionate about music as I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I found the love for video production and filmmaking. I mean, before I even started playing music in that semi-professional, range. But it came to this point where I was just like, you know, I had that point in my life where I was like, I want to be a musician for the rest of my life.
Right.
But then once I found the passion for filmmaking, and I knew that is what I could sacrifice my life for, then that's what I've been doing.
Right.
And that's what you, and then you reach this point where you're like, I don't even care about the money anymore. I don't even care about that. I care about if I can get by doing this.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what success is to me.
And to, like, most artists, like,
doing it for a living.
Right. And, like, I think most artists would be content making enough to get by, like, mm-hmm. doing their music, because, you know, being a creative person is, like, oh, this is going to sound so pretentious, but
that's the name of the game. Everybody's always has that one moment where they're like, oh shit, it works though.
Yeah. But, like, it's a unique thing, like, because you just have to do it. Like, if you're drawn to being creative, it's, like, something that's too fulfilling for you to not do. And that's, like, what makes or breaks an artist, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
is whether or not you have to do it. Like, it's not about, will it pay off a lot of the time. It's just, like, something that you have to do.
Yeah.
And then you just have to follow that through. Not, like, a lot, it's really sad. I think a lot of artists start out that way and then lose faith. Mm. And then they stop creating
mm-hmm.
because they're like, this is not viable. And then, but what they don't realize is, like, the creative process itself is, like, part of you. Like, you have to do it. Like, it's good for you. Whether or not you're making money, it's yeah. good for you. Like,
and that's why, I mean, it's so funny because, you know, I'm, it's stereotypical, but it's life, and I make fun of it a lot, but it's something everybody goes through. But, like, I'm a postgraduate, I'm living with my parents, I'm working a full-time job to save up, you know, and do yeah. what I want to do until I find something in my field.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one thing that my mom keeps saying. She's like, hey, I just really want you to know how happy I am that you're here and that we're spending time together, but she's like, I can't wait for you to get out and do right. what you want to do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there is that level of, like, you know, even whenever I came back from New York to finish my last semester in school, I was just like, for the first month back for that last fall semester, I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I it was hard, man. Like, it was so hard to say, is this worth finishing this last semester in school? Should I just go back to New York and stay it out and make it work? Mm-hmm. Because the work that I was getting, the connections that I was making, I was like,
how do you turn that down?
Yeah, like, and for me to have gotten that far in a month,
mm-hmm.
and been like, where would I be if I stayed 3 more months?
Yeah.
And, you know, having that thing, and that it's societal, but it's just like, I gotta finish. I've, you know, spent this much money going through school.
Yep.
I'll get the damn degree, and, you know, patience, and like you said, it'll come.
Right. And like, you know, you've done it before. You can go back, do the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have the experience, at least.
But yeah, that's the epiphany I had in New York, is I was just like, I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
And I mean, I knew that for a while, but I mean, up until then, it was just working on pretty cool sets in, you know, in Kansas City that were pretty professional, and school stuff, and then my own personal stuff. But I mean, being in it, man. Being in the big city, being on sets for television shows, hanging out with, you know, actors that you've seen your whole life. It's just,
yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to do anything else. And even being a production assistant, even just, you know, running coffee to people, you know, doing lockups and just making sure, you know, people were quiet and you know, helping out the assistant director team. Like, even to that extent, like, the stereotypes about that are pretty fake,
yeah.
Honestly. I mean, like, I was treated very nicely. People wanted to help.
Really?
And that was awesome. I mean, people wanted to help me. They talk to you if you're a you know, a people person, if you're a hard worker, people want to help you.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it is everywhere. And so, I don't know. I mean, what do you see with, like, music forward? Like, what do you want to do with it looking forward?
Personally? Me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's just one of those things. I think it's just, like, uncertain. Like, there's just so much uncertainty. You don't know what options you have at any given time. You don't know where you should honestly go with anything to make it work. It's like fishing. You just, like, kind of throw it out there and, like, see what you can get, or, like, how much people like it. And you can read the response you get pretty well, from any of your art, you know, any of your projects and stuff like that, and decide whether you want to keep going that way. But at the end of the day, I think, like, you as an artist, like, you have to do what you know, like, what comes naturally. Like, you can't really fake it. And we've talked about this before, like, about people who make art for the sake of, like, you know, politics or pop culture. Like, there's ways to make money with art, but I think it's, like, unfulfilling to, you know, just go make pop music or what you think will sell. And mm-hmm. I think it will fall flat 90% of the time anyway.
Yeah.
Like, people are really good judges of sincerity or, like, authenticity. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you come out with some stuff that's, like, inauthentic, they know and they won't like it.
Plus, oh, absolutely.
People love to think that, you know, they're the ones that found this unique art and then they cling on to it. And that's what gets you cult followings. Cult followings is what gets you wide note, like, popularity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, the key is authenticity, especially in art, for attracting, you know, consumers. So, like, that's what we're talking about, you know, finding consumers.
I think we said it, honestly, I think we said it all earlier, is that you're content with doing it.
Right.
You're content with playing shows, you're content with writing music, you're content with creating.
Yeah.
And like you said, you just keep doing it.
Yeah,
you
keep doing there's only it. So many adjustments that you really realistically can make,
mm-hmm.
you know, to your art. Like, you get too far outside of what you know and it becomes inauthentic. But if you don't listen to the crowd, you will, you know, you might miss opportunities.
Oh,
so
God,
it's like,
yeah,
a constant battle, you know, like.
I think honestly, I think subconsciously I kind of felt that whenever I got out of music, is I felt that, and you read the room,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Yeah.
You read literally. The room, and it was, our crowds were getting smaller, our following was getting smaller, and it was because at that time,
mm-hmm.
And I ran into my buddy at your show that one time, and we kind of reminisced about the past, because we called it the era, and
yeah.
It really was, because, I mean, he was in this band that I was always playing with, and we always saw each other, and it was just like, these bands that in that genre, we were constantly seeing each other, and it was just this era of you know, post-hardcore and punk,
yep,
and metal and death metal and all this stuff of these bands that we were just all playing with each other. And after the kind of heavy metal scene started to kind of die, because even bands that were big at that time that was kind of moving that following, like The Devil Wears Prada, Miss May I, A Day to Remember, They started going towards a very rock sound,
right?
And people, like, they, a lot of them started implementing a lot more singing. Like, I know A Day to Remember, like, almost did nothing but singing.
Right.
I know Miss May I is doing a lot of singing now too. I mean,
which is just so weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And I listened to, like, the Devil Wears Prada's new album, and for some odd reason, because I don't even really listen to that music anymore, I'll listen to, like, albums from the past and stuff, but, like, I was listening to it and I was just like, man, it's not that it's not good, I just don't like it.
Right.
Because it's just so different, and it's because bands like that, with labels, with, you know, agendas,
yeah,
I feel like they kind of had to change the tide.
Right.
To fit the following.
Right.
And I think at that point, with La Murda, and then after I left, they got Spencer to scream, and they switched to Dead Ties, and they switched to a little bit more of a, like, hardcore.
Yeah, yeah.
They were, like, definitely hardcore. And so they kind of adapted, and then they started playing with more hardcore bands, because hardcore kind of became the thing for a while there, too.
Yeah.
And the metal was kind of fading out, especially because metal is a type of music that, like, requires a lot of technical performance, yeah, from the band as well, not just, like, a screamer, like, right, just screaming. Like, it's got to be technical. It's
rhythmic, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And so hardcore, I think, really started to become this big trend, and then they went into that scene.
Yeah.
And then when the shows that I went to had great crowds and had, you know, consistent bands and stuff like that, too. So I think, in a way, they kind of moved with that crowd. And then I think the only one who's actually doing music now is Max. And now his is more of, like just punk. Like,
yeah.
Really solid, like, hardcore punk.
Yeah.
Which is really big right now, too, in certain crowds and stuff. So it's all about that moving and adapting and stuff like that, too.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, talking about just doing what you do and putting that out there, that's not to say that, like, you shouldn't adjust, or, like, that you should pigeonhole yourself into what you know, because, like, a lot of the best artists out there do change genres.
Oh, yeah.
Do, like, change their approach to art. And that's really a good thing for most artists, but you have to come at it from a sincere standpoint. Like, You have to actually be interested in the new style of music or art or whatever that you're doing. Like, you know, you could look at artists like Childish Gambino, for instance. Like, he's changed quite a lot since, like, his debut albums.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that it's not to sell albums, you know? Like, you can tell he's just, his interests have changed, you know?
Absolutely.
And sometimes that works for artists, sometimes it doesn't. Like, you could look at Drake as, like, a contrast to that. He's, like, basically not changed at all, you know?
Oh, yeah.
His music's the same,
yeah,
as it's always been, and it works for him, but he kind of, like, skyrocketed straight to the top and then, like, held that market down.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of other people have to fight to get to the top, and then that requires a lot of adjusting, and, like, you have to grow as an artist.
Even Tech N9ne.
Right.
I mean, like, from a local standpoint, like, I mean, his music has changed a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gosh, like, sixes and sevens and onward.
Yeah.
He is just featuring a lot bigger artists, mm-hmm, and the music is, the beats especially are getting a lot more, the production of the songs is getting a lot more, likable to a bigger audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's good.
Right.
And it's because it's natural.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's, like, selling out by any means. It's just, like, he's feeling out other things. He's finding artists that he likes collaborating with. And that's what Tech N9ne's all about, is collaboration.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, it works. It works if it's sincere.
I like that. And like, that's also where talent comes in. Like, you know, talented people, passionate people can establish themselves and then branch out, which I think is really, like, the most important thing if we're, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty. Like,
yeah,
the Devil Wears Prada, you know, to go back to that, they did that. They established themselves as, like, really good, talented metal artists, and then branched out to, like, you know, little subgenres here and there.
Oh, yeah.
From that. But if they hadn't established themselves, then they would just be starting over every time they changed.
I think probably the longest running consistent metal band was probably August Burns Red.
Maybe so, yeah. And they didn't change very much.
They did not. Yeah, they have they found a style early on, mm-hmm. and they stuck with it.
Yeah.
They stuck with it.
It was unique, you know? Like, they definitely made their own niche. But yeah, that's true.
So, I think we've talked about some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe we can move on, because I really did want to talk about the lyrics thing, and the singing, and you know, no dialogue in films and stuff like that, because we had a really cool conversation about it, too.
Yeah.
But for the listeners, like, what was the conversations had? What was the decisions that were made to say, we're coming back at this full force, but we're not singing? Because right off the bat, I mean, you know I've expressed this, and I've even had private conversations with other people, especially like Sterling's girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
the night at the concert, and I said, you know, it wasn't even disappointing for me that they weren't singing,
mm-hmm.
because like I was just happy you guys were getting back together, and now that I've seen what you guys have created, I'm just in love with it. And it's brought, because it's enlightened me.
Right.
It's educated me on like instrumental music.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've always been like this guy who loves like a band that's got, you know, a strong vocal following and stuff like that. But it's just like, there's other things out there, and there's experiences, but like,
there's other ways to express. Yeah.
Yeah. So like what, cause you and Sterling are incredible vocalists.
Thanks.
And, but yeah, so what turned that decision?
Well, so I guess it was pretty much a natural progression. Like, we started before we took our unplanned hiatus, we started writing more intricate guitar parts, just because, well, we started listening to some music that had more intricate guitar.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, yeah, we could do this with singing over it. And then it sort of just naturally got to the point where it was really hard to write singing over it. And we would get bored with stuff we could sing over.
Yeah.
So it was, kind of one of the things that stumped us, I guess. Like, that's one of the reasons that we, like, kind of stagnated and didn't pursue past that point, was that we had a hard time figuring out what exactly to do. And, you know, instrumental music back then was not a very popular thing at all. And I guess we just didn't really see it as viable to do that back then. So we were just like, shit, we're stuck. Like, what do we do? And so when we got back together, instrumental music had kind of picked back up a little bit. But also, we just kind of came to the conclusion that we were more interested in guitar than singing, like, which is, you know, kind of a shallow thing. There was like not a whole lot of like thinking it out as far as like, this is the kind of stuff we want to produce. It was just like, this is what we like, this is what we're good at, and we don't necessarily need vocals.
Absolutely.
In our opinion. So.
No, that's... Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, and it shows, too. And to let everybody know, I mean, this will be the fourth episode, but the two out of the three ones that I've released, I've used your guys' music for the intro, outro music.
Yeah.
And I probably will for this one too, if you send me something new.
Yeah.
So people can get little bits and pieces of that, because it really is amazing. And
thanks.
You know, you said this the other day, and it stuck with me, and I think it's such a great way. But it's and again, this is not saying that it's not accessible to everybody else, but it's music for musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you told me that, I was just like, okay, all right. But then I heard it, and I went to the show, and I was just like, absolutely. Because like, I mean, being in that field for a while, and Kelby and Derek Seeley, and even Max, mm-hmm. I mean, were just great. They were great guitarists. He was a great bassist. And so as the vocalist, you know, I was on the sidelines a lot, watching them write the music and appreciating what they could do, that obviously I couldn't.
Yeah.
And you appreciate stuff like that so much more. You pay attention to it so much more, because whenever I'm watching your guys' music, or listening to it, I'm just like, how the fuck are they doing this? Like, I don't know, you know, the lingo, but like the way you guys are all in harmony,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's not just like Sterling complimenting you on guitar, or you complimenting him, or complimenting the drums. You guys are all so technically advanced and seem to fit it together so well. I'm like, what?
There's not a lead. There's like not a lead
instrument,
right?
And thank God that I don't remember the band's name, because I, for no reason whatsoever, would want to like bash somebody on a podcast. It was just something that happened. But I went to a show once, and the headliner came on for the sound check, and they were all playing like insane things for the soundtrack. Like the drummer was incredible, the bassist was like playing these like crazy sweeps on his bass, and the guitarist was just like, I mean, it was insane. But when they started playing music, it was so disorganized.
Yeah,
like they couldn't all take that technicality that they all had individually and put it together as something that was listenable.
Yeah,
and I think that is something incredible to not only witness but to listen to with Legrand, is that that happens. You witness and hear that merging of all of these technical instruments coming together and making a beautiful harmony and melody that is enjoyable to listen to.
Damn, thanks, dude.
Yeah. I'm not just jerking you off here. I mean, like, I genuinely love your guys' music because you're talented.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's the
frame that I come from whenever I'm writing music. Like, it's not about the technicality per se for me. Like, at the end of the day, like, I want it to be listenable first and foremost. Like, because, you know, I get the enjoyment out of the technicality. Like, that is all for me.
Yeah.
But like, when you listen to music, you're not. There's certain, you know, musicians and stuff out there that will listen to it and just be like, oh, it's so technical, I love it for that reason. But like, I don't think there's any reason that you can't have both. Like, you can't, there's no reason you can't have technical music with you know that's listenable and catchy.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that we all kind of agree on as a band, it's like this weird little thing, is that we really fucking love the Sonic the Hedgehog soundtrack, right?
Hell yeah.
Right? Right? Like, it is some awesome music. And, like, Michael Jackson helped write the second soundtrack, Sonic the Hedgehog game. Yeah. But, like, you can listen to that. Like, everybody's probably played or heard that music before. And you can listen to it while you're playing, and it's, like, catchy. You get it stuck in your head. But then when you go listen to it on a technical level, it's really good music. Like, there's some crazy stuff happening there. There's like really funk, crazy polyrhythms, like cool melodies and stuff like that.
Video games in general, man.
I know, right?
Scores and stuff that are made for, very underappreciated.
Seriously.
By the mainstream, you know.
It's designed to be a background.
Yeah.
So you're like, you take it for granted, but like the people that make that stuff probably put a whole lot of like heart and soul into making that.
It's so funny, too, because, like, Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, my brother was a huge fan of those growing up. He still is. But, man, like, he bought the soundtracks on, you know, on disc. And that, you know, made me appreciate music and video games as well. And, like, Earthbound has... it's funny because Mac DeMarco's music has a very Earthbound-y sound and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure Wiz Khalifa... I hope that's the right artist, because I'm pretty sure it is, has actually remixed Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger sounds for his music.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And so, I mean, it's like, it's badass when you hear it, because you're just like, holy shit. And so, I mean, like, that's awesome. I really hope it's Wiz Khalifa.
That would be tight. I'm going to have to look that up.
If not, like, Kid Cudi, but that doesn't sound right. Definitely Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah, okay.
But,
we'll go with that.
But, yeah, site check that one next time.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, but, yeah, I mean, that's really interesting to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Honestly, like, that's kind of what we always told ourselves. Like, we just want to make Sonic the Hedgehog music. Like, when people that don't know anything about my band and like want me to tell them what it's like, that's what I tell them, honestly. I'm just like, picture the Sonic the Hedgehog soundtrack with guitars.
Hell yeah.
That's like as close as I can get.
Oh, man. And you know, you brought up an interesting point that I want to elaborate on too, is because we've had like baseline discussions about this, and there can be a lot deeper discussions about this as well, but one time we were at the Nelson, my friend Zach and I, who was a co-host on a few of these episodes, with our friend Corbett, who was featured on the second episode, and we were, you know, looking at this photo exhibit, and it was kind of funny because I'd never said it out loud before, but I was like, you know what, it's so strange because the photos that intrigued me the most, the photos and the photographers that I follow and that I enjoy their art, are photos that I would never take.
Yeah.
They're not photos that I would even think to capture in a composition, but they're the ones that I like the most.
Yeah.
And I think what you said just kind of made me put it into words a little bit more, like, put it together a little bit better for me, is mm-hmm. that to a certain extent, because I know there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, but you also have to, like, cater to your public, and, like, if you're making something, you're making it for other people, right?
Right.
And at the end of the day, I keep telling myself it's no. Yeah. I keep telling myself that you only make it for yourself, and if people like it, then yay you.
Right.
Like you said about the cult following, like, you find that thing,
right,
and then people are like, this is kind of unique, but I like it, and then you kind of make that cult following.
Yeah.
And it's because I think if people aren't making something that feels right to them,
mm-hmm.
that is viable for them to make, that they are passionate about making, it translates into the music, yeah. into the performance.
It does. It comes and crosses in authentic.
Yeah, it does. And it's just like, I think that's really important to think about too, is that for artists everywhere, like, don't focus so much on making art for other people. Like, make it for yourself.
Right.
And it'll come across as authentic.
Well, there's, like, a predictability about it. If you make the goal to match what people like, it's predictable. It's too predictable.
Oh, man,
and, like,
yeah.
the thing is, like, too. People are always looking for new things. Like, you can't look into the outside world for inspiration about what people are going to like, because it's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you focus on what people are going to like, you're going to be late to mm-hmm. the party. Like, you have to innovate. Like, that's the most important, if you get down to it, that's the most important thing for art, is innovation, because you want to make people feel things and think things and, you know, hear things that they've never thought of before.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That's what people love about art, is, like,
yes.
it forces them to feel a new way about something, anything, and that's what people buy into.
Just had that happen to me today, actually. I was watching this film called Close Up,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Iranian film,
mm-hmm.
and it is, like, this director is so revolutionary, because especially, I mean, I think this movie was made late 70s, possibly 80s, I think it was late 70s, but it's a hybrid of documentary and narrative.
Really?
And it's not a reenactment. It's not like one of those, like, Imposter, have you ever seen that documentary? Or The Thin Blue Line. Like, that's a big one. That's like one of those, like, big documentaries. But it's like a documentary that does a lot of the reenactment scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that. It's documentary-based in the sense that there's a lot of footage in the film that is done in a documentary style, in the sense that it's not planned.
Right.
It's not scripted. Excuse me. Like, tried to burp and hide it. Scripted! Jesus Christ. But if you've made it this far, congratulations. But you're welcome, I mean. So it's the fact that it was done without the actors knowing what the intention was.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is that the entire cast were the real people of the real event.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Clint Eastwood just tried to do that with that new movie, the 12:15 to Paris.
Really?
But it bombed.
It did.
Like,
it was not
people
good.
Did not like it. It was, I mean, people, like, criticized it for that reason of using the real people
yeah.
for, like, the movie. But this guy did it, and it was a movie about, like, this guy who impersonated a director, like, a famous Iranian director, on a bus, and, like, kind of got into this family, and, like, they fed him and let him stay at their place, and, like, he told them that he wanted to use their house as a location for a film,
yeah.
and, like, was really, like, playing this part. And I won't ruin the end for anybody, but by the end of it, it really is this illusion or delusion of what the hell was real
yeah.
and what was reenacted
right.
by the real people. Because by the end of it, it's such a twist ending
mm-hmm.
that you're like, holy shit, that obviously wasn't planned.
Right. But
it
turned out
a lot of
way.
It was planned for the sake of recreating the movie to let people know the story. And it blows my mind, and it's so heartwarming that, again, not only for the way the movie was made,
uh-huh.
but the message that came across, it was just like, and I had this, like, reaffirming moment of, like, this is why I love art.
Yeah.
Like, it just gave me this feeling that nothing, like, somebody who just told me the story by mouth, it wouldn't make me feel the same way.
Yeah.
It was the way that it was
done
that created that feeling.
This is like, and that translates to another point that we've kind of talked about. But it translates to this thing we've kind of talked about, where when people are creating art, a lot of the times people from the outside probably think, I mean, I assume they probably think that they have the whole thing planned from the beginning. They know what the meaning is behind all their art. But for a lot of artists, most artists probably say, they just make it. And then it kind of, it's like a subconscious thing. When you get done, you're like, oh, that's what this was about. This is what I was going for. Yep. But you don't really even realize it until the end.
God, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, because we were talking about Darkroom. About how, like, you know, you'd made it and it was like kind of about this thing.
But it completely changed.
But it was completely about something different.
And I did not believe that. From the film production perspective, I never believed that. Because pre-production is, especially when you even take producing classes in college, which is like a mock production of a film, which you miss out on the location scouting aspects of that, and like the real time that goes into it. It's mostly just like the work that like focuses you on the paperwork. But it wasn't until my photography class, like darkroom photography class, that the professor told me, and it like it just grew in my brain like a disease that was just like, nobody knows what the hell their art is about until later. And it's so true. Like, if you... But I've also read, you know, theories that, like, art is when it's planned. Art is when preparation is put into it and stuff like that, which I think they can go hand in hand. I don't think it's one or the other. But in the sense that, yes, when you're creating art, there's a lot of planning that goes into it. There's a lot of writing and preparation. But I think this comes into the meaning. This comes into what it means to you and what you are trying to do with it. Doesn't even, like, reconcile with you until after.
And then, you know, people, the meaning, like when you finally get done, that's what people are going to get from it, you know. And so, like, you could set out trying to make people feel a certain way, think a certain way, and I would say probably like 99% of the time you're going to miss that mark, but it's going to be something it's going to be something
relatable,
more substantial and more authentic than you ever planned for it to be.
Yeah,
like, to go into like a little bit of detail for my writing process, like, I write one guitar part at a time. Like, it starts with guitar, and it's literally in like 1 second snippets, like three notes at a time. I record those like three notes or like a little tiny riff, and then I just elaborate on that, and I'll get like 10 or 15 seconds in, switch to the other guitar part, and like try to bolster or like fit into what I've already written, and then it just kind of builds like slightly. And so, like, by the time I'm done with the song, like, I never really know when I'm going to be done with the song. I just keep writing until I feel like it's done. But then by the time I'm done, I'm like, this is not at all what I planned. Like, this is...
Holy shit,
just kind of built itself over time. It's like an organic thing. It's really weird from my perspective when I'm done to listen to the music I've written. And it's like super rewarding, you know? Because it's like, it kind of feels like listening to somebody else's art, you know? Like, well, I bet a lot of people out there probably just take credit for it. They're like, yep, this is what I planned to do. This is what I was going for, you know? But for me, like, the experience of being surprised by my own art is, like, got to be one of my main motivation, like, my main motivations when it comes to writing it, because it's, like, just super surprising and fulfilling at the end. And it's like, you almost can't take credit for it, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it just kind of happens, like...
And I think, just because we are running out of time, but to end on that note, is that I think what I've gathered from this is that if you're an artist, you know when you're lying to yourself. And if it doesn't pay out in the end, if people don't receive that message, if they don't get what at the end you felt out of that, fuck it. At least you did it for yourself. Because you learn, I mean, through... Whenever I finally stopped making films that I knew I was lying to myself about and started making films about things that I wanted to make films about, like, genuinely through me, at the end of it, you grow so much. You look back at that and you're just like, fuck, man, I don't know if anybody understood it the way I did, but making that film itself, recreating those emotions that were inside of me, those memories, that hurt. And, you know, because especially whenever you're making personal art, you dive into some really deep feelings. And...
That's where the good shit comes from.
And you just feel good at the end of it. It's like closure for yourself. And I think that's what
therapeutic.
Art
can
do so much.
That's why you have to do it.
Awesome. Josh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For taking the time and providing your awesome upstairs chill out attic. Yeah. I mean, basically, but it's awesome.
Pretty much.
But yeah, hey, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And
no problem. Thank you, dude.
Yeah, go listen to LeGrand.
Check it out.
Support your local artists.
Watch Dark Room.
When it's out.